As we move into the 4 o'clock hour, it is time for our weekly conversation with the great Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston, play-by-play color commentary, I should say, for the Boston Celtics TV broadcast. He's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and findmassmoney.gov. It's fast, it's easy, and it's free. Scal, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing well. You guys?
Doing great. It's good to talk with you. Hopefully your phone holds up a little bit better this week. But let's go ahead and start with what was a unsuspecting win against the Milwaukee Bucks. Peyton Pritchard must have got off the bus hitting threes because he was drilling them from the logo basically all throughout the game from the first quarter on. He ends up with 28 points off the bench and just adds another dimension to this relentless Boston Celtics offensive attack on a night where Jason Tatum didn't really have it going. I know we're only four games into the season, Scal, but where do you see this team's ceiling right now?
You know, I think it's amazing that, you know, I've been on teams where a coach can get the most out of some and then not necessarily the most out of all. But think about, like, Sam Hauser's out. There's some opportunities to knock down shots, and Peyton Pritchard steps up and fills that role. I would have to say, like, looking at all the players that we have, you know, he's got Tatum and Brown making sacrifices last year trying to move the ball, and he got everybody else playing at, like, the best ball of their career. And I feel like a lot of that is, you know, the players, you know, getting those opportunities, stepping up, working hard every single day. But it's also the empowering mindset of Joe Mazzulla, and give credit to the assistant coaches who are there every day putting in the work with the guys. So I think when you see a Peyton Pritchard do that, it's a cumulative effect of, you know, all hands on deck. And, you know, Peyton Pritchard a couple of years ago wasn't playing, but he was putting in that work every single day. And they're starting to see the results of all of that.
Scal, I made a couple comparisons for Pritchard. We've gone through the Julian Edelman evolution, and I know you know all about him since you were on his podcast recently. But in the beginning, Julian Edelman was just like this scrappy kid. Oh, we're going to find a role for him. Or even Brad Marchand with the Bruins. Like, oh, he's a pain in the ass. He does all these things that pisses off other teams. And both those guys at some point became Pro Bowl, all-star, like elite athlete-type players for their teams. Does Peyton Pritchard have that upside? Is he a guy that at some point when he gets the right opportunity, we're just going to realize, no, he's not scrappy. He's not a role player. He's not a bench player. He's a good basketball player.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things, like when you're talking about all-star, all-NBA, you know, like dominant levels, you know, there's like a few things. Like his finishing game can improve a little bit at the rim. Like to be a Like when you're like those type of players, not to like spark up bad memories in Boston, but you ever see Kyrie go to the basket and, you know, the plethora of finishes that he has. When you're an undersized guard, you have to have all those. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying he doesn't have all those. We're just not seeing a lot of that. And for him to get to that level, he would have to do that. But also you would have to give him the opportunity to do that. And every time he plays, and every time he plays big minutes with big responsibility, he usually plays really well. So, yes, I think the answer to your question, he's more than just a scrappy guy that works hard. I think he's super talented. He's tough as nails. You know, he got the respect of his teammates. And I think there is a ceiling for him, and we haven't seen it yet. But I would just say from my point of view, for him to crack that level, he would have to become an elite finisher around the rim to get to that level. But I don't put anything past him. If one day he wants to become an elite finisher and focus on doing that, I think he could do it.
Celtics are in Indiana tonight taking on the Pacers. Scal, I think we all sort of agree that the Celtics are the most talented team out there, and they did sweep the Pacers in the playoffs, but a bunch of those games were really close. Are there any teams in the East that you think may, despite not being as talented, could provide matchup problems for the Celtics in the regular season at the very least going forward here?
Yeah, I mean, you got a target on your back every night. I think Indiana's going to play hard tonight. I think the game is going to be really good and really close. Orlando would be another team like that. You saw just Vancaro had 50 the other night. What they're capable of doing, they're shooting the ball a lot better this year than they did in the past. They were a good team, couldn't make shots at a high enough level. Now they are. So that's a team that I find maybe a little scary. I thought the Bucks on a back-to-back played really well. They were terrible. They were terrible against the Nets, but maybe I wasn't giving the Nets enough credit. Like, they played really well against the Nuggets last night as well. So, but I think Milwaukee could be, you know, there could be some tough regular season games with those teams. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of teams. And just the cumulative effect of the schedule could sometimes come back to bite the Celtics. But I think that they're looking at this, and it's really early. but they're looking at this to be like an all-time great season. And I thought Doc Rivers like said it perfectly the other night. The championship unlocked the Celtics, and I think that's exactly what happened. They're all playing at an elite level. They're playing at the finals level to start this season. So where does that mean for them, and where can they grow from there?
I don't believe we've gotten a chance to ask you this, but there's this idea that the whole Olympic experience or non-experience for Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and that whole thing is going to motivate this team, or at least your two star players, even more. Do you think that that will actually provide any sort of motivation for them this season?
You know, NBA players, did you watch The Last Dance and you see how Michael Jordan just makes up stuff in his head to be
yes.
motivated? Yeah. Like, and I'm sure Tom Brady's like that. I'm
Absolutely.
Sure all athletes are,
yep.
are kind of like that. We're talking about a margin, like 1%. 1% makes a massive difference.
Yep.
So if they are motivated in an individual workout through the months of August and September based off of that, and it's just a little bit more, it makes a massive difference at the highest level. So the answer is yes. I think they are motivated by that. But do I think they have a picture of Steve Kerr and Grant Hill on their mirror looking at it every day? No, I don't think that. But I do think that athletes do search for adversity, and they search for motivation, and it wasn't hard to find it for these two guys who have accomplished a lot.
Is Jason Tatum a legit MVP candidate this season? Like, is in top three, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that has a lot to do with what the Celtics do. 68, probably not. 70, you got to really think about it. Are you really going to not give a guy an MVP if their team wins 70 games? So there's a lot that factors into that. You know, like we keep bringing up, like, I don't know how good Denver's going to be, but if you look at Nikola Jokic on court, off court, like they're like a lottery team with him off the court and a championship level team with him on the court. So there's things like that that come into play. I think writers who vote are more sophisticated now than they were in the past, where they just gave it to the best player from the best team. But I think it has to be like an overwhelming success of the team, and Tatum so far continuing the numbers that he has. Plays a lot. You know, he's going to probably have games where he sits in fourth quarters because we're blowing teams out. So there's a lot that goes into it, but I don't think that 65, 66, 67 wins would get it done. I think it has to be like in a remarkable record to get it done.
Doesn't politics play into it too sometimes? Because you know that those writers who are sophisticated, I agree with you, but they didn't want to give it to Jokic three straight years with no championships. So Embiid got it that one year. Giannis got it his one year. I think like Luka hasn't won an MVP yet, so he might be the next one up.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't that next one up thing, there's fatigue in the MVP voting, isn't there?
There's a little bit of voter fatigue. You know, there's also, you know, they're like, it's like they use the advanced analytics to justify their pick, right?
Right.
To say, you know, what is, and then sometimes when the advanced analytics all point to one guy, they'll take the record to make it, you know. So I think you're right. Like, it would seem odd for Jokic to get another one if Denver is the fourth seed right now in the Western Conference. But SGA is in that conversation, so what's their record? I think SGA and Jason Tatum like fall in their same category. Everyone recognizes their team is really, really good. So for those guys, it's probably best record at that point. And Tatum's always been a big plus-minus guy. Like, ever since he was like his first year in the league, he's been a plus-minus guy. So I do think there's voter fatigue, and I do think there's advanced analytics to support any argument.
So I'm sure you've heard the discussion about rules changes. Maybe you've even taken part the Nick Wright thing. We should get rid of threes and they're bad. Any thoughts on some of those topics, including the idea that I think he brought up and I actually brought up here earlier in the week? What if you made dunks worth 3 points as well to sort of balance out the court and the value of points?
Yeah, but I think he doesn't understand the concept of it. Like, the reason why the Celtics shoot well from two at the rim is because of the threes. You ever want to play offense? Like, go find out why, like, you can't play offense with Ben Simmons out there because he can't spread the floor. So everybody says, like, it's a much more beautiful game when everybody is accounted for. It creates rotation. It creates driving gaps. It opens up the floor. And I like, offensive ratings are off the charts right now because the coaches are sophisticated. They go out and they get players that could shoot. It's a massive advantage to have an Al Horford and a Porzingis out there that can defend at a high level and take away threes. I disagree with anybody saying I don't like the game anymore. If they say they don't like the game, then they're trying to like appease a player or a team that they particularly like. And they've now realized that their team has no shot of beating the Boston Celtics. So you go ask any coach out there, any GM, you know, coaches in college. I have kids on my AAU team that struggle shooting, and the coach will not give them a scholarship because of it. So everybody has adapted to shooting the basketball, and I don't want to hear about rule changes. This is a beautiful game right now, especially because I think since Joe Dumars has taken over, the physicality has been way up, which is much better than it was 4 or 5 years ago. Right now, the game is at its best. We have physical play. They allow stuff to go. And then you have the great, you know, talent of these offensive players. I don't want to hear anybody about old school 80s basketball is better. That's just not right.
But do you think there are enough shooters to go around? Because not everybody can be the Boston Celtics and shoot 56% threes and hit as many as they can and just blow people away. You see it sometimes in the NCAA tournament where teams get hot one game, they have the upset, and then that same team goes, you know, 2 of 30 to start the next game, and their run is over. Are there enough shooters to go around to play this style of basketball as widely as it's being played?
Well, I know Sam Hauser was undrafted. I know Peyton Pritchard was a late pick. You know, I know a lot of guys that, you know, people didn't value. Derek White was a late pick. So how about they take their time in getting the right guys, and then when they do get the right guys, how about they take the time to develop it? You know, like we, at the very beginning of Joe Mazzulla's tenure here, everyone was down on the threes. Joe Mazzulla sat at the end of the plane with me and explained to me why we want to do this. It made no sense at the time to me until last year and then this year, and they're blowing everybody away because of the threes that they took a couple years ago. So maybe a lot of these coaches, GMs, they can't make that full-time commitment, where maybe it doesn't look good at the beginning, but heck, it'll eventually look good a couple years down the road if you can buy into that sort of style. So I'm not going to penalize the Boston Celtics or when the Golden State Warriors made their run for being different. That's what we want from sports, to continue to evolve, and that's what they're doing right now. So the rest of the team should be forced to catch up, and they will. The rest of the NBA will catch up as fast as they can. But right now, we thought the league was going to be closer. We thought the Celtics gap wasn't going to be as big as it was last year. We're coming to find out at this point in time. It's early, I get it, but it might be even bigger than it was last year.
All right, Scal, before we let you go, Shams was on with Pat McAfee today, said that the Celtics are targeting December for Porzingis to return. Is that around what you're the same thing you're hearing? And what kind of impact do you think he's going to have after being out for the first 2 months of the season? Is he going to just slot right back in like no big deal, or how do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing December as well. I've heard later December, like Christmas, but okay. Every time you see him, he looks good out there. But what I will say about that is I think it's going to be a long process to bring him back. And why rush him? And I think Porzingis should play a lot. I just don't think he should play a lot of minutes, if that makes sense. Like, you should play as many games as you possibly can, maybe sit out of back-to-backs. But there's nothing wrong with playing like 18 to 22 minutes, just getting him out there, getting him acclimated. Remember, you have to build up your stamina to get ready for the playoffs, because that's like a whole nother level. So just being on ice all year or playing half speed does not help him to get ready for the playoffs. So if he comes back, when they bring him back, I think he'll play hard. I don't think he'll miss a beat, but I don't think we'll see him playing like 33, 34 minutes.
All right. Well, there you go. Big Christmas present for Celtics fans out there. Scal, thanks so much. We'll enjoy the call of the game tonight with Indiana, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. See you.
Thanks, Scal. All right. It's Brian Scalabrine joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. We're going to take a quick break. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Stiz is going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, what is wrong with your Boston Bruins? We'll discuss next. Yeah, no one should feel good about that one last night. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arkin, Andy Hart. Bruins get shut out at home by the Philadelphia Flyers, who are one of the worst teams in the league. And that Forrester goal was... there was an empty netter at the end. That was basically the only goal of the game. It's all they needed. It's all they needed to beat you. And it wasn't even much of a gut. You heard it. It was a rocket shot. Hit the backboard. Bounces back out. He takes another shot. He beats Korpisalo, who had a decent little game. He wasn't good, but he was decent. He made a couple of big saves in that game, I would say. And certainly deserved better than to get shut out by the Flyers. And that's a Flyers team and a Flyers goalie who's not good. Bruins could not solve him. You had Matty Potts out there getting smacked around. You had Pasternak on the doorstep after, I forget who it was, Drysdale goes down with an injury, and he can't get it past past him. And then a minute and a half later, boom, the one goal, basically only goal of the game, goes in. And the Bruins now looking for answers. And I just don't know where they're going to come from. I don't know where you're going to get answers for this team. I feel like Jim Montgomery, early on in the season, everybody tells me it's early in the season. Yeah, we're 10 games into the season. How many meltdowns has Montgomery had on the bench so far? Four or five, at least a handful. I mean, we're talking about every other night, basically. There's something. He's letting loose on somebody. He's smacking somebody around. He's doing whatever he's doing. And that, to me, is not the sign of a guy, because he wasn't doing that in early going in the last couple of years. Everything was sunshine and rainbows early on in the first 2 years of the Jim Montgomery experience here in Boston. And I just think this is such a stark contrast. It's such a big difference. And if you think I'm overreacting, well, talk to the head coach. He's overreacting too. And I don't think it's overreacting. I think this team's in trouble. I think there's a real problem here with this team. And in the next, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, however long it takes to get to Thanksgiving here, a month, you're going to have to start answering some of these questions. Otherwise, things are going to have to change.
Yeah, I think Montgomery is showing you with his emotions how he feels. His emotions on the bench are high, are angry, and his emotions post-game are borderline broken man. Borderline, I don't know, just the grunting sound. I continue to always say it, losing is undefeated. It puts pressure on you like you just don't expect, think you can deal with. You've been in hockey or football or baseball a long time, and then it wears on you. And that seems like a guy that's worn. Now, what I don't know is if the contract is wearing on him.
Right.
Does he think he's coaching to fix a team and he's worried that the team isn't fixable? Or does he think he's coaching to save his job? Those are two different things, two different end goals, and probably create two different pressures. And I guess the answer could also be both, right? Like they could both be happening at mm-hmm. the same time simultaneously. But for him to seem answerless and broken, what are they? Seven games in?
4-5-1. They're 10 games in.
10 games in.
Yep.
10 games in. 10 out of 80.
Mm-hmm.
That's a relatively small sample.
It is.
Now, I don't overlook it. I think it's significant. And I also think it's significant. There are teams that are front runners. There are coaches that are front runners. There are players that are front runners,
yeah.
right? The last couple of years, they've been able to be front runners, right? And then this team is not a front runner. They are scuffling in every area of the team, the ice, the coaching staff. And I don't know that his energy is good right now. I don't know that his approach is good right now.
I don't think it's landing with these guys.
No.
It doesn't seem to be.
So what do you do? It's almost like you played the, I'm going to yell at Marchand card.
Right.
Well, I did that. And now I'm just going to go, I don't know, and be a broken man at the post-game press conference. Well, I've tried that. What's next? Do I put them on the line and just blow the whistle and say, again, again? Do I like treat them like they're freaking kids or whatever? I don't. He has to be searching for a way to spark. Maybe it's Cora. Remember when they were scuffling and he gave them like the days off and just show up and play. Don't even worry about warming. Like, is it something like that? Is that the next one? A little laissez-faire atmosphere that they're professionals. And these are men and they'll handle it in their own way. I don't know, but they're not playing well.
No, they're not. And he's tried other things. He's tried mixing up the lines. We've seen, and I just saw today, some crazy lines, and I just closed out of it because the Patriots injury report is out, but I'll find that the practice lines today are kind of all over the place. And this is from Scott McLaughlin. Some true blender combinations for the Bruins in practice today is what he says. Line one, Zacha centering Beecher and Pastrnak. Line two, Lindholm centering Marchand and Kostelec. Number three, Poitras with Frederick and Brageau. And your fourth line, Coyle with Jones and Koepke, with Geeky and Johnson sort of on the outside looking in. That right there, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of mixtures, and they've already tried a few different things.
But that's wholesale.
But
that's
every line is different now. Yeah, basically.
And I'm not the hockey guy. Like, does this mean they're going to do that?
Not necessarily.
Generally do that, so they're not playing.
They're trying
like, day after
out,
a game.
Yeah.
Does that generally lead to you see that in game action?
I mean, usually, yeah. I think that's what this leads to. If it's not every single one of these things,
that feels
you'll
desperate.
Probably see a couple of them. And yeah, I mean, listen, this is his job could be on the line. He might be desperate. Like this is not too early. Thanksgiving is when you start having these conversations about underachieving teams, especially teams that were fighting for the division last year and who have been leaders in the Atlantic and really in the Eastern Conference for quite a while now. I mean, you don't see this team start off this way. You just never see it. And that's a problem for these Bruins. That's a problem for their business model. They hook you in early in the regular season, and then they drag you to the playoffs, and they run out of gas. They don't start off slow like this. This isn't how this thing goes. And I guarantee you that gets the attention of ownership and management. This is not how we do business here, guys. You know, we lose at the end of the season. We don't start off like this. We run out of gas at the end.
Maybe that's good.
Is it?
Because last year, the season didn't play out as perceived. Remember going into the season, everybody was like, well, they're not going to be as good, but they'll be scrappy and their metal will be tested and they'll be better, you know, set up for the postseason, blah, blah, blah. And that really wasn't the case. Like,
right.
They were good. They were a good hockey team. They had a lot of points. Like, maybe this is a different spin on that. Maybe they get hot at the right time. What do you think about this text from the 860? Bruins were doomed when they gave Marchand the C. How do you think a guy who takes cheap shots and licks faces is a good leader? Do they have a leadership problem?
I don't know if Marchand's not a bad leader. I wouldn't say that. I don't think that they have a leadership problem. I think they have a talent problem. I think they have a personnel problem, and they may have a coaching problem. You know, I think it's more about that. I think Marchand's a better leader than he is a player right now, if that makes any sense. You know, like, he's a guy I think that can sort of rally the troops a little bit. I'm just not sure what you have here anymore. I'm not sure what Pavel Zacha is anymore. Morgan Geekie's on the outside looking into this right now. He was supposed to be a big impact forward for you guys. I don't know. I mean, Johnny Beecher, you feel good about him up there in the top? Costello, like, listen, some of these fourth liners getting chances up on the higher lines is fine. But now all of a sudden they're just, guys on the second line. They're not this overachieving fourth line anymore. And then it's not quite as impressive.
Right.
And they're getting pushed around by these guys in the top lines on other teams. You got Carolina coming up tomorrow. The Hurricane, you don't have a great history with them.
Right.
Like, this could be one of those look in the mirror, come to Jesus kind of games coming up here tomorrow.
Well, and if you don't start scoring, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
You can't win if you don't score. So you think this is a Sweeney problem? This is a roster formulation problem?
On some levels, I don't think that.
Or just not getting what he.
So far, you're not getting a lot from either one of your recent signings. I don't think that Zadorov or Lindholm has really set the world on fire for you so far. Now, it depends on what you were expecting from them and what you think about someone like Charlie McAvoy, who's been terrible lately, too, and some of these other players. But in general, I would say, yeah, you know, I think a lot was expected from guys who they rolled the dice on. And maybe, you know, giving as much money to these other players and even to Jeremy Swayman, I'm still thinking that you need a goalie, and that's an important thing on a team like this. But, hey, I mean, there's only so much money. There's only so much money to go around. It's all used up right now. They'll get more later on in the season, I guess. But this is not a very well-constructed team right now. It just doesn't look that way.
But you can't make the there's only so much money to go around argument when you signed a guy. What'd they give Lindholm? $7-something
right.
a year? Like, that's a big contract.
Yep.
And if you don't feel like you're getting return on that investment, that's not a money issue. It's like I said to you yesterday. Don't blame that you picked the wrong player to hand that money to. And remember the season started, all the preseason stories about, oh, he's Patrice Bergeron. He's really just Patrice Bergeron. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. He does everything the same way. If you were getting Patrice Bergeron, would people be complaining?
No, but I don't think Bergeron was all that great last year, honestly. I mean,
No.
They were a better team, but yeah.
They weren't comparing. It's like when they bring up Bill Belichick. They're not bringing up Bill Belichick, the four-win coach.
Right.
They're bringing up the respected coach. When they bring up Patrice Bergeron, they're bringing up the legend.
2013 Patrice
yes,
Bergeron.
They're right, bringing up the best. And I'm not saying Lindholm.
And you're definitely not getting that from Lindholm.
I'm not saying he's the biggest problem either, though. I don't think he's the biggest problem on this team. But I do also feel like there's a lot of guys that I say that about, and that's probably the biggest problem. I don't think he's the biggest problem, but. I don't think he's the biggest problem, but. But they're all not playing at a level where they're the solution.
Right.
Right? Gerard Mayo's in the solutions business. Well, the Bruins aren't in the solutions business right now at all.
No.
Their players aren't providing solutions. Their coach is not providing solutions. And we do have some texters that think it's all on him.
It's all on the coach?
I believe the Bruins are not playing for their coach. They want him out of there. They know it's a contract year and they do a bad season, blah, blah, blah. They want him out. You believe that?
That might be true.
That flies in the face of everything that Razor said to us on opening night.
But he also was on with the Midday Show last week and was like, hey, you know, if you're a player, you don't really care about your coach that much. You just care about going out there and playing your best and playing for your teammates and blah, 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 blah. He did backtrack.
Oh.
I thought he backtracked pretty hard last week when he talked with Jones and Keefe. But I made, you know, maybe he was making a point or something and I misunderstood it, but it sounded very different from what he said to us at Scores.
That's interesting.
Not the Fours.
And also, Scores.
Right,
that's definitely scores. That's interesting because I thought that was a really insightful comment if it were true.
Mm-hmm.
At opening night.
And like, maybe on opening night, they felt differently, you know? It's the only
but that's my, like, if you really care about a guy, it doesn't change after a few losses.
Right.
Like, if you think that's my coach, that is my coach. You guys need to make sure he's my coach. We'll figure this out. We're not playing well, whatever. That's my coach. But if you start to wonder, is that guy really the best coach for us? Is he really putting us in the best position to succeed? Is he really doing what's best for the Bruins?
So far, he's overseen one of the biggest gag jobs in the history of the franchise. That was the first thing he did. And that's not, I mean, again, you're going to blame him for that. But if you're asking,
I'm going to blame him for that.
Fine. But if you're pulling the players who I think deserve more blame for that than Jim Montgomery does, what are they going to say? Yeah, well, you know, the coach, right? Like, I mean, that's just an easy thing. And that's the way that most teams end up looking at stuff like this. Well, we got talent on the team. We're spending to the cap. We just gave all this money to all these different guys. We should be better than this. It's the coach's fault. Like, that's
it's an
easy thing to fall
back.
It's
low hanging fruit.
It is.
It's a cliche, and I don't think it's often right.
No.
It's not fair. And it's often the answer, though. It's often the easiest thing to do because, all right, we'll move on. We can't move on from all the players. Can't tow every car on the street, so he's gone.
Exactly. We have some breaking news here from the Patriots. Their injury report is out. Donnie did the sounder. The non-participants are Christian Ellis, abdomen, Vidarian Lowe, don't love that, ankle and shoulder, and Jacqueline
Roy. He's got two.
He's got a whole bunch of problems. And Jacqueline Roy, a non-participant with a neck injury. The following players were limited: Alex Austin, Kyle Duggar, Daniel Aquale, Antonio Gibson, Jonathan Jones, Michael Jordan, Marte Mapu, Drake May, Jalen Polk, Layden Robinson, Sione Takitaki, Jelani Tavai, Keon White. No full participants. But
this wasn't limited. Yeah, you might as well just list the players who are good.
Just list the healthy guys.
List of limiteds. Only a couple of non-participants there. Drake May, limited, as we knew he was going to be with the concussion. Any thoughts there, just on the sheer number, I guess?
The number is not great.
It was a long list last week, and not a lot of guys.
I think we're starting to see that that's what they do.
Right.
And we've learned this over the years with other teams, opponents. Holy Moses, they get a long list, and then they all play in the game, and you realize people treat the injury report differently, and some people just sort of unload everybody that's got a hangnail or whatever. If you went to the training room, you're on the injury report. The Drake May thing, to me, is just the story of the week. Vidarian Lowe would be my sub-story, because you've said it. For whatever he is, he's your best left tackle.
Yep.
And for whatever it's worth, the offensive line, according to the head coach, has become a strength in recent weeks. We can debate that. I don't know if that's necessarily true or not. I think the strength is you changed quarterbacks, and the quarterbacks looked pretty good that you put in there, the young guy. But if Vidarian Lowe is out, I don't love that at all, especially if Drake May can't play.
Yeah.
I don't love that double dip combo. If you tell me Drake May gets a different left tackle, not ideal, but I think he'll figure it out. But if you tell me it's Jacoby Brissett behind DeMontre Jacobs goes back to left tackle and we're moving things around again, that's a recipe to not take advantage of another winnable game.
This just hit me. And
it was me, because I won the fight.
Well, you need a little help. You need a little extender over there.
There was somebody who said, what's he going to punch him in the kneecaps? It's not funny. Not that short.
Cam Robinson just got traded to the Vikings.
Okay.
He was the Jacksonville Jaguars left tackle. He's not a high elite left tackle or anything like that, but he's been good enough this year, and they made the trade, and they brought him in there because Darisaw went down with the injury. Vidarian Lowe probably has some trade value for you right now.
Yeah, but are we just going to give up?
Yeah.
Can't shrug. We're on the radio.
I mean, yeah. Like, I was thinking about it, but yes, I think we kind of are, right?
But
I know that
you don't
want to
play Drake May because he's had a concussion, but you're okay playing Drake May not behind your best offensive line because you're going to unload for 10 cents on the dollar anybody who's worth anything.
Yeah, and then maybe I keep Drake May out.
Is this an estate sale?
Keep him out a little longer. I mean, I've seen enough to know that Drake May is the quarterback of the future. I don't care if he doesn't play another snap this season if he's really got concussion issues. If that's really a problem for him, then that's fine. But if we're talking about, you know, doing what teams do.
No, I'm
trading
not.
Kendrick Bourne, trading Jonathan Jones, trading Vidarian Lowe. I mean, these are guys with trade value. There's not a lot of guys that have that on your roster right now. And, you know, Gonzalez does, I guess, but you're not trading him. Vidarian Lowe is sort of a in-between guy. He doesn't make a lot of money. He might be someone that you're getting some phone calls about, that's all.
Yeah,
and if you're getting phone calls, you got to take him. You're a 2-6 team.
I feel like Vidarian Lowe I kind of want around.
Around, too. I'm just saying, there's not a lot of guys with trade value.
No, but I think he has a future.
You think so?
He could be a swing tackle. He could be somebody I want around moving forward, whereas I think less of, like, Jonathan Jones may be gone. He could retire. He could just choose to leave as a free agent. Kendrick Bourne, is there a future there? I mean, fine, but I don't know if a team that doesn't have offensive linemen, just doesn't, You're going to get rid of the one that you think is the best, correct? You think he's the best lineman.
I do think he's your best tackle, yeah.
Okay. He might be your best lineman.
And Wenu, I think, still your best lineman, but
based
not
on
this
what?
Year.
History.
Not this year
history.
He hasn't been. Yeah.
I'm not living in history. This
Fair
is
enough.
Like my Drake May thing. I'm measuring it on the here and now. Drake May's the best quarterback in some of these games. Mm-hmm. Darian Lowe's the best offensive lineman you have. And you want to unload him?
Just saying.
I don't.
Not a lot. There's not a lot of great options out there.
Yeah, but right Alamo's, I'm not going to get any enough for him either.
Yeah, that's true. Robinson was only a fourth, right?
Yeah,
or
so
fifth,
I'm gonna,
conditional to a fourth or something. So you might
get
not
a
get
seventh
much, yeah.
or a sixth for him.
But
I'd rather have a
more,
blocker.
They might get more desperate as you get closer to the deadline. That's all, you know.
They won't get that desperate.
We'll see.
Not as desperate as Drake May will be if you put him out there behind a terrible offensive line for the rest of the season.
That's true.
And it's already going to be terrible, but even more terrible.
It'd be worse without him. I agree. And I probably wouldn't do it. I just think that, you know. These are the questions that are going to be asked. Who are the Patriots going to get calls for? They're going to get calls for him. I guarantee it. I guarantee there's going to be teams calling asking about Vidarian Love.
They might, and I'd say no.
Okay.
I need to put somebody out there. I put together a crappy line to start the year. I can't give away the one guy that developed into something that fans even kind of like.
There's also this. The Pro Football Hall of Fame has announced the 9 semifinalists for the contributor category for the class of 2025. Would you like to hear who they are?
Yeah. Coach James is listening, too. Coach Stacy.
K.S. Bud Adams.
Bud Adams.
Ralph Hay.
Who's that?
Don't know. Bucko Kilroy.
Yes, former scout of the New England Patriots, a legend in the Eagles organization. He's a legit football lifer.
Okay. Art Modell.
Fired Bill Belichick.
Art Rooney, a lot of arts. Art Rooney Jr. Seymour Siwoff, I'm not familiar.
I believe it's Butts. It's pronounced Butts.
Very good. Doug Williams as a contributor, he was a player too, right? Doug Williams, the quarterback.
Yeah.
Why is he a contributor? I don't know why he's a contributor. Maybe it's a different Doug Williams. And John Wooten.
So no Robert Kraft,
who would advance to the next round of voting along with Robert Kraft.
Oh yeah,
son of a.
Robert Kraft's there too. He's one of the last 9 members of the contributor blue ribbon committee. Made their selections from a field of 25 in the most recent reduction vote. Committee discusses the semifinalists at length when it meets on November 12th. And selects one finalist for the full selection committee to consider for possible election in the new class of enshrinees. Now,
who would you pick?
I mean, Modell and Rooney are right there. They're on the list. I don't know much about the rest of these guys. I don't know what Doug Williams is there for. Bud Adams, I'm not sure. Bucko Kilroy, I'm not as familiar
Bud
with.
Bud Adams was the owner of the Oilers.
Okay.
His daughter, Amy Strunk Adams, is the owner now of the Titans.
Oh, right. Okay, sure.
I believe.
All right.
I've never heard. Is it Richard Hay?
No, Ralph Hay. I got right here. He was the owner of the Canton Bulldogs, but he's mostly recognized for organizing the first meeting of teams that would later form the American Professional Football Association, later called the NFL.
Okay.
So nothing to sneeze at.
That's pretty. I mean, none of these guys would exist without him, it seems
saying.
But Robert Kraft has a very. To me, his resume is better than the Rooneys and the I think the Rooneys are already in. Is this a second Rooney?
This is Art Rooney Jr.
Yeah, I think senior's already in.
I think you're right.
Now we're just giving it to everybody who owns the Steelers.
All the Rooneys.
You inherited the team. No, get out. So eliminate him. Doug Williams, I don't know why he's on this list. Eliminate him. Bucko Kilroy, I think, is a legit football lifer who should be considered. Certainly the Hay fella should be considered for starting the league. But Robert Kraft has a resume that's better than Modell and Adams, I believe.
I agree. I think this is probably the time he's going to get in, unless they just decided, you know what, bleep that guy, we're not letting him in no matter what. And that's really the only thing keeping him out at this point.
Well, maybe
that's probably it. I mean, there's no other reason to not put him in there.
Is there any chance that, like, the losing helps him in a way that they feel like maybe he's humbled and come down off his high horse and now will...
Any reverse psychology something there? Maybe. I don't know. Listen, these voters are weird.
They are.
They're definitely weird. They have weird standards.
Yeah.
They feel like they're the stonemasons or something, and there's all this, everything goes through them. It's a very weird kind of thing.
Stonemasons?
Not the stonemasons.
The
Freemasons. Yeah, right. Not the stonemasons.
Stonemasons, they just build you a stone wall.
They just build a wall. Yeah, I don't know.
You don't need a fence in your yard. Build a wall.
The Freemasons.
And Doug Williams is the first black quarterback to start and win a Super Bowl.
So why is he a contributor and not just in as a player?
Not sure.
That's what I don't know.
Redskins.
Yeah.
Commanders.
Right. Excuse me.
Drop that.
Well, when he won, that's who it was. And he was one of the three guys that won with them. It was Rippon, Williams, and who was the third one that all won for the coach that Poirier hates?
Oh, Theismann.
And Theismann was the third one?
He won. Wasn't he the early one?
Okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was Theismann, Williams, Rippon, I think, in that order. And they all won for, what the hell was the coach's
name? Joe Gibbs.
Joe Gibbs, thank you.
What is going on here?
I couldn't remember anything about that.
I'm the one who usually forgets stuff. I'm going to need you to, like, know things.
Smelling salts.
Yeah, we need smelling salts.
Wake this guy up.
617-779-7937. There's your phone number. Quick break. When we come back, I don't know if you've... I think enough time has passed that everyone's seen this thing. The Dwayne Wade statue. Dwayne Wade has a statue that is going up, or has already been put up, I think, outside the where the Miami Heat play. And it is the worst thing I've ever seen. It's the worst statue I've ever seen, and I've seen some bad ones. We'll get into that, and also the TNT crew had something to say about it. We'll discuss that with them next. It's nice to have those guys back in our lives. For the final season, perhaps, unless they catch on with NBC, the TNT crew discussing the Dwayne Wade statue, which if you haven't seen it, we just had it up there on Twitch, if you're watching, on twitch.tv/weei. You haven't seen it?
No. Because really? That's not Dwayne Wade, so right. Show me the Dwayne Wade statue. I don't know who that is.
So there's been lots and lots and lots of jokes made about who that looks more like than Dwayne Wade.
Lawrence Fishburne,
right up there.
You had a different one?
I thought he looks a lot like John Locke from Lost.
Yes, that's one I've seen, yep.
Yeah, Mr. Clean is another one I've seen. Antoine Walker, the statue looks much more like Antoine Walker than it does Dwayne Wade. It's maybe the worst statue ever, and that's including the Ronaldo statue. Do you remember that one?
The Cristiano Ronaldo one?
That one was bad, but it looked like him. Right?
It looked like him,
but it was deformed and sort of weird. But like it was like a Picasso painting of Ronaldo. This doesn't look like anybody in Dwayne Wade's ever met before. You know what I mean? This is about as bad as it gets. Now, this is the second NBA statue controversy. We remember the Allen Iverson miniature statue, which everyone got all upset about until they realized that all the statues out in front of that place are miniature. It wasn't just his. But that's
a bad idea, too.
I don't love that idea either, but it's not like they only made a small one for
him. Statues should either be life-size or bigger, not miniature.
Right.
And I'm as a little man saying this.
A miniature statue.
What if it was a miniature statue of me, it'd be tiny.
Right?
Like, what are we doing here?
They're pretty small.
Plus, if you're putting a statue up of someone, they're heroes. They're iconic.
Right.
So they're larger than life. Right? Isn't that like the idea of it?
Yeah. Outside of the Staples Center, whatever it's called now, the Crypto Center. Where do the Lakers play now? What's the name of it? Is it the Crypto.com Center? Didn't they have to take that off because crypto.com went under? Or am I crazy? I forget. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
anyway,
crypto.com.
It's crypto.com still? When you go in there, there's a huge statue of Shaq, and he's like dunking, and you have to walk under his grundle to get into the place. You know, that's a little weird. But at least that's like a big, cool statue, you know? Look at it. Look at Shaq dunking up there. Like, that's cool. Ted Williams putting the hat on the kid outside of Fenway. Cool statue.
Bobby Orr flying through the air.
Bobby Orr, good statue, although he's still with us, so I don't like it.
I know your rules.
You have that rule, too.
You said you're not into that. I co-signed it. It's never really bothered me, but I don't totally disagree with it.
Fair enough.
My issue here is, did you hear, I actually read him, Dwayne Wade defending the sculptors?
Yes, and there's a video of him.
Why?
Seeing it. Because, I don't know, I mean, you know, you only get, how many people get a statue made of them, period, in their life?
Exactly, so I want it to be good.
I'd be happy just to have the statue. I don't care what it looks like.
Even if it looks nothing like you?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
What if it was this
As long
statue?
As it says Arcan down by the feet, that's all that matters. That's all that I need to
see. No, because then no one will know who you are. It's like, that's
They'd have to
know.
Sculpt the man boobs very accurately.
Yes,
otherwise, people
true.
Would know it wasn't me.
And what'd you call them? Tyson and Holyfield?
Oh, yeah. Mike and Vander. That's what their names are. But yes, their first names. We don't have to get all formal here. Either way, it's a bad one. That's a very, very bad statue. And I think that in general, these sculptors, and you're right, Wade, he did put a video out of him seeing the thing for the first time and acting like he really liked it. He's defended these sculptors to the end of the earth. And I'd imagine it's not easy to be a sculptor, you know? Like, it's a tough thing to do. And when you when you put that sculpture out there, everyone sees it, especially if it's like a famous person. Like, everyone's going to see it. And if it doesn't look just like that person, like, I'm worried about the Brady statue. I'm worried this Brady statue is going to be like that, you know, like that. This is what these statues look like now.
And I got to assume.
None of them ever look like the person they're supposed to be, ever.
And I got
to
assume, like, these are high-end sculptors.
These are the best sculptors probably in the world, yeah.
Like, they probably do famous people all the time in front of libraries, arenas. So you're right. For all we know, the Brady one is being done by these people.
Yeah.
Right?
The Brady one.
Wait, did you just say it was hard, though? So don't do
it. I'm just saying it's probably a hard job. You know, it's hard to get it right is what
but
I'm
saying. So is brain surgery. True. And I'm not capable of doing it, so I don't do it. But if I did it and killed somebody, would I just shrug it off and say, you know, it's hard? Mm. No, if I go to a brain surgeon, I expect him to do brain.
The Dwayne Wade one.
There are your boobs.
There they are. The Dwayne Wade one, though. Like halfway through the sculpting of that thing. I don't know if maybe they saved the head for last. They saved the face for the very
like
end
Ted
or something.
Williams?
Maybe, yeah.
Save the head for last.
Something like that. You got to do the face first. Like if you're a sculptor, just a little sculpting tip out there for anybody listening. If you're a sculptor, do the face first and then decide if you want to do the rest of it. Because if the face doesn't work, the rest of the sculpture doesn't matter. It's right. Really, that's all anybody's going to look at is the face.
No one's going to say,
is the face accurate
his
or not?
Biceps aren't that big.
Right, yeah.
His
no
pecs
one cares
aren't that
his
big.
Man boobs aren't that big. Like, no one's going to say that.
They should be like faceless. You know what I mean? Like a generic face with your jersey and your number.
No.
I don't know.
No, they need to focus on the face. The face has to be the only thing that they really, really do.
Can I ask a question? Why do they have to use, why does a sculptor have to do it in this day and age? Like the busts in Canton, don't they actually mold their faces?
I don't know, do they?
I believe.
Like a death mask.
I believe in Canton, in the
like
Pro Football
like
Hall
of Fame. Like the pharaohs back in Egypt.
Right?
Yeah.
So if it's so hard to do, ask Dwayne Wade to lay down one day and, you know, they put straws in your nose or however they do it and do paper mache or whatever,
or
do
just
a mold.
3D print the thing.
Or that. Yeah, there's computers.
Probably work out just
Madden
as good.
Does the whole scannings of everything.
Yeah, the face scans, sure.
This is, you're making excuses. Oh, it's hard. Why is it hard?
I wasn't really making excuses. I was just saying it's a heavily scrutinized thing that these people go
Lots
out
Lots of
do.
Things are hard. That's why the people that do them should be experts and specialists and skilled.
Well, then how come
And if you're
no
not,
one
then don't do one
no
of the
one
greatest basketball
it,
players in the history of the franchise and their first statue and put it before the public.
Yeah, but Ronaldo's was bad. Remember that Lucille Ball statue?
That's what I was just looking up.
That one is ridiculous.
Is that the scary one here? This
yes.
One right.
Yeah,
that one is not what she looks like. And I mean, listen, like that's what I'm saying. Like it's hard probably to nail exactly what a person's face, but that has to be the thing that you go for. That has to be all that the statue is really about. It has to be the face. If you can't get the face right, then you should turn down the whole contract, because otherwise you're just going to be made fun of forever, and they're going to have to melt the thing down and, you know, smelt it or whatever they do, and that's it. And then you're, you know, then the guy who had the statue that got smelted wants to be that.
Did they fix her? Because I have side-by-sides. There's like
I don't know. Did they?
There's a second statue there that's much better, that looks more like her. But I also solved my problem. When you're doing the casting or whatever of the head, you don't need the straws because in your world, they're dead. So before you put them in a box, just, hey, can we borrow that head for a minute? We just got to
splat.
Just get a little imprint of that and we'll be good to go.
Don't screw up this Brady statue. All right?
We're still getting it?
Do the face first. I think so. Yeah, right. Okay. Do you think we're not? You'd know more than I would.
He said naughty words the other day, so I don't know if he's been canceled.
Tom Brady said naughty words?
Break. That was so ridiculous.
Oh, about the... Yeah, right.
Says the man named Stiz.
The S word, yeah.
Yes, sure.
Give me a break.
Well, Brady's going through it right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Brady's putting up... playing Landslide on his Instagram. When you find out... Yeah, you find out the ex got a bun in the oven. I could see that being an emotional day. I'm still waiting to hear who Brady's... it's about time. It's about time we got a little Brady leak.
Yeah.
About who he's been seeing and
now
how that's all going and all that, right? Don't you have to fight
back?
Yeah,
who should it be? Have to.
Yeah. Who should it be? Like, if he was, like, going to do a rebound, get back, like, who's the hottest woman star in the world that he could just, like, stop the planet if he's dating her?
Sabrina Carpenter.
No.
No? A bit of an age gap there, I'd say.
I don't even know.
Kim K would make everyone
Kim Kardashian.
Oh, that would stop
the
world.
That would drive people nuts. Mm.
That would stop the world.
I wouldn't believe it,
That
though.
Would be bigger than Swift and Kelsey.
And supposedly they have a thing.
Kim K, there's been rumors.
True, yeah, they've been rumored.
She was, like, looking at property around. In one of his areas or something down there, and yeah. She was at the roast. She got roasted.
Yeah, she did.
She did. Not as bad as Giselle. And some people have surmised, and I don't think this is a terrible guess, that this is a revenge for the roast baby, right? You know, you're gonna roast me like this? You're going to have all your friends come up here and make fun of me? What do you think of this?
I'll roast this dude. I did see a lot of responses online that did make me laugh, like, you grow up finding out your dad could have been Tom Brady, but instead it's this random jiu-jitsu guy.
That's
tough.
That's great.
Like, son of a, my stepbrothers, their dad is Tom Brady, and I am this guy, jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah. Who's an age-appropriate, like, supermodel for him that would bother Giselle? Like, Adriana Lima or one of the Anna Beatrice Barros or whatever, somebody like that. Like, you know, someone who was probably in the magazines with Giselle, but... has been linked to other people. I don't know.
Who's the hottest woman alive What comes up? Jessica Biel. Oh, these are all
Jessica
old.
Biel. She's spoken for, unfortunately. Or maybe not.
Isn't no, she, I think there she's a whole thing.
We'll get back to you on this.
Rihanna?
617-779-7937. Rihanna's all wifed up with ASAP
Rocky. Selena Gomez? Adriana Lima's number three.
Adriana Lima. Okay, there
so
you go.
Kate Upton is still on the list.
Kate Upton, the
spoken
Verlander,
for.
Yep.
Scarlett Johansson, is she married?
Yeah, who's Colin Jost. She's got kids with Colin
Most
Jost.
Most of these people are married. Bella Hadid?
Bella Hadid. I don't know what her deal is. Yeah, sure, Bella Hadid. Why not?
Bella Hadid is in the top.
Or her sister, Gigi Hadid.
She's next
right?
on the
they
list.
They got the both
she's,
the Hadids.
She's seventh, yes.
That would be, date both the Hadids.
Both of them, yes.
Yeah, Tom Brady, can you handle both Hadids?
How about Jenna Ortega?
Don't know who that is.
I don't either.
If you saw her picture.
Oh, is she Wednesday Adams?
Yeah,
yes,
kind of looks like
okay,
that.
Okay, I
yes.
know who she is. She's very young, isn't she? Whatever. All right, we're going to take a break. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Drake May, limited in practice today. Should he play this weekend? We'll discuss right after this.